Hello and welcome to Being Well, according to Dan and Brian, the only podcast that is called that. I am Dan Shuffleton. What I lack in height, I make up for in personality. With me is the brains of this operation, Brian Touchdown Thompson. Touchdown, how you doing today?
These nicknames, man, they're getting better and better. I mean, Touchdown, I mean, right now, although you hit kind of a sensitive chord with me since sports, you know, all I get to watch right now is like repeat games from 2001. You know, I'll take it. You can call me Touchdown.
Here's one for you. I have never scored a touchdown. Why? Because where I grew up and I went to school, my high school was so small, we didn't have a football team. We didn't have enough like kids to play on it, I guess.
That's sad.
Yeah, I really
enjoyed football. You've never gotten to do a touchdown dance or anything?
I mean, I do it on my own when I'm, you know, just hanging out by myself. Yeah, absolutely. I dance all the time.
That's not a touchdown dance. That's just creepy.
Well, that's why no one sees it. It's just me.
Okay. Well, we're gonna have to fix that. We're gonna have to reenact like a football game from your childhood and allow you to score a touchdown.
Wonderful. We'll see if we can
see each other again
next year's sales meeting.
There you go. Well, I'm excited, man. We got a great guest today.
You better be excited. I welcome Sharzad Abtahi. Sharzad is the director of lighting design at Lightcraft. She was one of the first lighting designers to earn WELL accreditation and even teaches lighting and design at Suffolk University and Boston Architectural College. A frequent speaker at multiple lighting and architectural conferences throughout the country. In March 2018, Sharzad was named one of North America's top 40 under 40 lighting designers by Lighting Magazine. Welcome, Sharzad. How are you doing?
Hello, Dan and Brian. Thank you so much. I'm great. Today, finally, we have a sunny day here in Boston, so I'm pretty happy about it.
I need to tell you, I am most impressed with the top 40 under 40 in North America. You know, I usually see the lists that are like, you know, I'm in Columbus, Ohio, so I see the top list, 40 under 40 in Central Ohio or 40 under 40in Columbus, but that's nationwide. That's quite the honor.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was an honor to be on that list. Yeah. Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's jump right into it. Sharzad, for the listeners at home, tell us your story in 30 seconds or so.
Okay. So I studied architectural engineering for my bachelor's degree. And my passion for lighting started with working on my studio projects without actually recognizing that I was doing lighting design on my project. I always had lighting as a big element on my design, but I never knew that this is like a major that I can live out of that. So for my master's program, I came to America and I went to Suffolk University for my interior architecture degree. And I took a lighting design course and I met the most inspiring teacher, Josh Feinstein, who was my former boss. And then I realized that, oh my God, I can do this. I'm really passionate about lighting. So I started working as a lighting designer.
I love the stories where it's, you know, it seems like there's one person or one event or something that happens to people that inspires them in their careers or in their life's work or whatever they want to do. I love stories like that.
Yeah. It started with this really amazing teacher that I had at school.
That's awesome. You know, I think to Dan's point, I mean, I think we all could look back and find that one person that kind of got us interested in what we've are most passionate about.
I'd like to know yours, Brian.
Me?
Yeah.
So mine, it's interesting you say that. There was a father of a girl I was dating in high school who made some comment off without really knowing me very well that I was gonna basically not amount to much. I can't remember his exact comment. And so I literally my motivation in life is that man.
Well, I hope you email him updates of, you know, whatever you're doing.
He doesn't deserve that. But that is that is the guy that motivated me. Now, from an inspiration standpoint, there's a ton of people that I, you know, but that guy, I can pinpoint the time period of my life, and that was it. That was it for me.
Sorry for going a little bit off topic there. It struck me. Yeah. I had to know.
You got to know. You got to know.
So I want to interrupt you earlier. We should talk about this after.
Yeah. Indeed. Apologies, Charizard.
This isn't Ryan, about me. This isn't about me. I didn't know I was being interviewed. Now, Charizard, I got to ask you. I mean, we heard your story about how you got interested in lighting and lighting design. Now, you are a lead AP. You're also well AP, like Dan and I. What was the first thing that really got you into the health and wellness side of it and interested in the WELL building standard? Because that's obviously above and beyond what, you know, would be in the scope of a normal lighting designer, right?
Yes, it's so maybe you expect to hear that I was interested in the lighting and the effects of lighting on the wellness of the people, but my interest in the WELL standard didn't start from there. The nutrition chapter of the WELL standard was really interesting to me, and I read it for my knowledge. Also the fitness chapter, that like how really making small changes can affect your well-being, and how we can improve our life without making huge changes. And then I started reading more and more about the WELL, and of course, because I was a lighting designer, the lighting chapter also fascinated me. I knew a little about the circadian lighting before, but then as I got more familiar with the WELL standard, I got studied more and I researched more about the effect of the lighting on the well-being. And then I keep researching and keep studying any paper that comes out that has the circadian lighting or the wellness and the relationship to the lighting. It's continued.
I couldn't agree more. I had a similar path. I was really interested in the nutrition and the fitness, because at that time in my life, I was trying to be more, feed my body more nutritious things. And then from that, I told Brian this. I learned about circadian rhythm, and I had a hard time sleeping. And it was because, what didn't help it was that I was, you know, looking at my iPad before I was going to bed. And then I read the part about circadian rhythm and light cycles, and I said, oh, I'm waking my body up before bed, and that's why I can't get to sleep.
That's totally true. And it has an effect on you, and it has like a much bigger impact on children. So if you have a children, make sure that they're not exposed to their cell phones or their iPads at night, because they won't get to the deep cycle of the sleep. And that's the stage of the sleep that the brain cells develop. So that's very critical for children.
It's funny you say that, because I like my house to have like the 5000K like bright white hospital operating room lights. And so when we moved into our new house last year, you know, we're installing all these, and then that's around the same time when I started learning about the WELL building standard, and I'm like talking to my wife, and I'm like, maybe that's why our kids don't want to go to sleep at night, is because their room is, and everywhere in the house is like a, you know, an operating room. And it's just like triggering their, you know, their rhythm out of sorts. And so we swapped all their lamps with, you know, a warmer light, and, you know, and tried to help adjust those. And it made a huge difference. So
it does.
Right.
Like, what you did is like keep getting your child coffee and sugar and expect them to go to bed at 8.
Well, we give them coffee and sugar at 7. we don't do that at 8. We do that at 7.
See,
out of their system by 8, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So that, so, that is still my work.
Well, I'll tell you, I got a follow-up question. It was interesting. I was thinking about how you said in school you learned a little bit about the circadian rhythm. How much of that do they teach when you're going to school to be a lighting designer or an interior designer? Do they teach a lot about the health and wellness aspect of lighting, or is it focused on other aspects?
So at school, we most learn about daylighting and the effect of proper daylighting on the wellness of the occupant. And when you study about daylighting, the circadian lighting, it's one factor that is the most important part of that, that how your body gets exposed to cooler color temperature during the morning, and then eventually as the sun sets, and you will get exposed to the warmer color temperature, and then your body goes through different changes throughout the day. Your productivity level changes, your hormonal level changes. So that's what we learn at the school. But then as when I became a lighting designer, I learned more about the artificial ways that we can achieve the circadian lighting, going with tunable white fixtures that you can adjust the color temperature throughout the day, and different methods like working with the intensity or the duration of getting exposed to some special types of light. And that's what I learned later.
Interesting. I have a question for you, Shahrzad, and I've thought about this, and you are the perfect person to ask. I am intrigued with the UV light aspect in clean air, described in well. Is UV light a catch-all for bacteria and microbes and any other grossness that could be in our space?
Yes, it depends on what type of grossness you're talking about, though. So the UV light is something that, like in the healthcare facilities, is getting used, and they are already using that. But mostly they will work on the bacterial and microbial infections. The only type of UV that would work on the viruses is the UVC, which is very dangerous for human beings, and you cannot use it on a space that there are occupants, like in hospitals, like in an OR room when everyone leaves, they will use the UVC. But it's still, that is not something that you say, okay, it would sanitize the room and I don't need to clean, because any area that won't get affected by the light, like under the table or any area that is under the shadow, won't get sanitized. So it's very important that what we are trying to achieve, and not get fooled by marketing out there. Like in the marketing material, you will see this will kill 99% of the germ, but what is the definition of the germ? And each virus is different, and there is no way that you say, okay, this type of UV would kill any type of virus out there.
That's really fascinating. I was unaware of that. Is that type of light dangerous to humans because of the brightness, or like the type of light waves it puts off, or just like the gases used inside the bulb?
It's because of the wavelength, like how you will get the sunburn when you go outside, because you are getting exposed to the UVA and UVB, which is the weaker type of the UV. There are two types of UV, UVA, B, and C. The UVC is produced by the sun, but it doesn't get to the earth because it would be blocked by the atmosphere. That's why you won't get like serious health condition by getting exposed to the sun if you don't get exposed for too long amount of time. But when you get exposed to the UVC, then that is very dangerous for human beings.
I love it when I learn something new. Thank you. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Shahrzad, it's interesting that, lighting, obviously, as we've already talked about, can have good effects, but it is interesting to hear you talk about lighting that, we obviously need to be careful of, and can have negative effects. So it's very interesting. Now, Can you explain, I mean, obviously proper lighting design can impact construction cost. I mean, we want to do these things that are addressed in the WELL building standard and that we know are good for us. But as you know, and have experienced, I'm sure, cost is usually a huge objection that design professionals have to overcome with their clients. Any advice or, you know, comments on, you know, maybe ways that you've learned to help overcome some of those objections and ensure that your client gets the right lighting package and design?
That's a great question, Brian. Unfortunately, there is a perception that lighting is expensive, and when you hire a lighting designer, it should be for a fancy project. But there are some real simple changes that it doesn't cost anything on the construction. If you care about the contrast ratio of lighting in your space, it will have a huge impact on how much you feel comfortable with spending long hours in a space, or how you would control the glare. We will use probably the same type of fixtures with the same price point, but how we place them and like how we aim them, or like just by changing a finish on a fixture, you can control the glare significantly. So these are the things that there is really no cost associated with that. It's like the fitness and nourishment chapter that just by making this lifting a smaller plate size, you would eat less and it would give you some benefits. And also there are some changes that it has a really slight differences on the cost. Like when we talk about the color rendering, and like how like things would appear under a certain color temperature, or these are small changes. There are like a very small amount of money that you need to spend, but it will make a huge impact on your design. And also, it's true that you will pay your lighting designer in front, but when you have in any aspect of the construction, when you have a professional on board, you're not going to deal with the problems that would cost much more later on to solve. Now lighting, it's not like 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. There are a lot of technical aspects involved regarding the controls, how fixture gets dimmed, if all of your fixtures would dim at the same time, and are they compatible with the control system, how you will create different scenes. And if you try to do it yourself, it might work, then lucky you, but if you get involved in a problem, solving these issues would be really expensive. And I'll prefer to spend a little more money in front rather than dealing with really expensive solutions later. And also that would spend, you have to spend sometimes a lot of time too.
Well, yeah, there's gotta be a lot of nuances, right? To, you know, the different lighting specs and things like that, that maybe some people don't even fully understand.
Exactly.
That would be a really expensive mistake if, you know, they had to then do the project again, kind of by calling someone like yourself in to fix what they did wrong.
Exactly. Now, when you look at cut sheets, they are much more technical than 5 years ago. There are much more information that even sometimes it's new for me, but I know resources to go back and ask people that what it exactly mean. Is it compatible with what I'm doing? Can you check that? Can you confirm that? So it's going more towards the engineering part. Still design is involved, but the engineering part is becoming stronger and stronger every day. And that's something that you definitely need to have a professional on your side.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
Shahrzad, you mentioned this earlier, and I'd like to revisit that just because from my own knowledge. So you have to keep in mind that we are two-bit flooring guys, so we don't spend a lot of time looking up at the ceiling because we're always looking at the floor. But of course, I appreciate lighting because I want my flooring to look its best. So can we talk about feature 58 color quality? I just really have a hard time understanding this. What is the color quality index, and what does this feature mean?
Of course. Unlike you, I always look at the ceiling when I enter a space. But so the color index is the CRI. It's the color rendering index. It's a number that shows how accurate the colors in your space will look like. For each color temperature, and by color temperature, we are talking about like how cool or warm your white color is. There is no color involved here. It's about like how it appears. So for each color temperature, there is a standard light source that would render all the light perfectly. And I'm explaining it into very simple terms. It's much more complicated than this. But imagine your light source tested with that standard light source and see how close that number is, how close your fixture is working. So the highest number is 100, which means that it's perfect and there aren't any light fixture with the CRI of 100. It's more like 98, 99. And then depending on the application, you need to select what CRI is best for your project. Like in a typical office space, CRI of 80, 85, it's sufficient, it's still good. But if you are lighting a museum or a gallery, you need to go with like higher than 90, 95, or even higher CRI. Also, if you have a lot of red in your space, you need to go with a higher CRI because in lower CRI, the color red doesn't pop up. So maybe some people have noticed that you go in a retail store and everything pops and the colors look so saturated, but you bring it home and you don't see that saturation in the color. That's the CRI. The CRI in the retail store has been a higher number. But when you bring it home and you see it at your under artificial light of your home, it's a lower number.
That's phenomenal. That was a great explanation. I actually have an understanding on that now. That made perfect sense. I do have a follow-up question for you, and this is more of like a question regarding when you let's say you go and visit a friend's house or you go anywhere. When you see a new space, do you automatically think of, oh, the lighting on this is, I would do this to the lighting, or this lighting is wrong, or this lighting could be better? Just, do you just do that naturally when you walk into a new room or a new space?
I do, but also I had a boss that he always told us that a good lighting is a lighting that you don't notice. So if you walk into space and everything feels good, it's probably a good lighting. But if you walk into space, there are hot spots and dark spots. You're not comfortable. You're sitting in a restaurant and then the trackhead is aimed towards your eye and you're not comfortable. Or at the same restaurant, you see that your partner has really dark circles on her eye, under her eyes. These are all related to the lighting, and these are all about bad lighting. So you would notice the bad lighting pretty easily. If the color temperatures are not consistent, you will see the shifts of color, or if they use a low quality fixtures, you will see that some lights has like a more green tone, some more has like a pink tone. So yes, I, like sometimes I walk into space and I feel that I tell myself, I wish to use the warmer color temperature when you have all these wood finishes, or, if I walk into modern space, I would say, I wish they use a cooler one. So the white colors would, pop, but yes, I cannot control that. I would judge.
You are not alone. I talk to myself the same way when I walk into somewhere and, you know, they need more of a certain type of flooring or they're using the wrong flooring. And I tell my wife, bless her heart, she has to listen to me. But yeah, no, you're not alone. I do the same thing, except for floors.
Mm-hmm.
I know. My wife is so sick of hearing about floors. I mean, it's almost 15 years now and we just walk, you know, anywhere we go, I have something to say about the floor, good or bad. And, you know, and I got to tell you, I think to your point, I love that. It's almost kind of like no news is good news, kind of, you know, if you don't notice it, that's good. I notice it a lot. So from a lighting perspective, even more so now. So that just tells me that a lot of people need to learn more about lighting. So, you know, and that kind of brings me into my next question. I mean, as a professional lighting designer and someone who's very accomplished in that field, I mean, what do you wish more people knew about when it comes to lighting in regard to health and wellness and how it impacts us with our bodies?
Very good question. I think we need to focus on the value of lighting more. It's important for people to understand what lighting can do in a space. When I was talking to my mom and I was telling her that I'm going to become a lighting designer, she couldn't fully understand like what is my job, she said that, so why in a project they need someone to do the lighting design. So I started explaining that like these are the things that we do and these are the changes that we can make and these are the effects that we can bring into the project. And then when you explain it to people, everyone really appreciates that and there is an aha moment that you say, oh, okay, that's it. That's why we need to have that. And when best way to educate people is to show them bad lighting, that like these are the things that you should avoid and these are the effects of a bad lighting, like for example at your home when you have 5000K, how it can affect your children and the whole mood of the family when the children don't sleep, but also how small changes again can make a huge impact on the design. And when we talk to designers, it's really a pleasure to work with designers that they appreciate the value of lighting and they are willing to spend some time and money on the lighting because they know without the proper lighting, their design doesn't show up and they cannot represent their project the way that they imagined.
It's interesting you put it that way because I, on a regular basis, have experienced a customer who has dealt with a bad flooring decision. And you can tell the people who, you know, when you say show them a bad lighting design, the people who've experienced, you know, a failure with flooring, for an example, are always much more focused on the performance aspects of their next selection. And so I could imagine you meet people who are the same way that have experienced what not to do, whether through their own mistakes or someone they know, and then they're coming to you to help make sure they don't make that same mistake or make that same mistake again. Is that fair? Have you experienced that before?
Exactly. And sometimes some decisions seem right and they are working for a while. But after a year or 2 years, they will realize that, oh, it's not working the way that it was supposed to work. It's like buying a car. You need to invest in something that would at least work for 2 or 3 years for your car. And for lighting, it's much longer time. You're not going to renovate your lighting every year. If you're unhappy with your sofa, you can change it. But with the lighting, it's a much bigger project to renovate your lighting and change your lighting. Yes, we had experiences that sometimes people call us and ask for fixing an issue. And sometimes it's not really easy to fix rather than starting it right from the beginning.
Probably not easy to fix or cost effective in most cases.
Exactly.
So, Shahrzad, you are, as you know, and as everyone knows now, a Well AP and a university instructor. Now, before I ask this question, just know that I am of the opinion that I have, hands down, flat out, the optimal flooring for a classroom. So I'd like you to describe your dream lighting environment for an educational classroom.
That's a nice and very interesting question. So I would love to have daylight coming into the classroom that I teach, which usually I won't get it because we have a lighting lab at a school, and in a lighting lab, they usually put it in the basement so no lighting comes to the space, so you can see the different effects of the artificial lighting. But I wish we could have daylight coming in. That's the best type of lighting in any environment, not in most environments, to be exactly correct. But also in terms of artificial lighting, having flexibility in lighting is really important. In a classroom, you don't always use one task. We have lecture, we have presentation, we have a study, people are working on their computer sometimes. So it would be really nice to get flexibility to adjust the lighting perfectly for the task that is happening in a room, and creating some different scenes that depending on the activity, you can make some adjustments.
That's, you know, I think anybody will, especially right now, as a lot of us are working from home, can appreciate being able to look out a window. I mean, it's funny, the things that we've taken for granted. I mean, I love being able to just sit and look out a window or be outside. And I can imagine being, like you said, in a basement with no windows. It would be nice to have at least the flexibility to open a window or a window shade and see outside and get some natural sunlight.
Exactly. Yeah.
We've talked about a lot of different things today, which have been really interesting. And I look at the Well building standard and where it's going with version 2 and where it was with version 1. And it's a global standard, right? And so it has to adapt and tie into everywhere across the globe. You being from Iran and, you know, working in other parts of the world and living in other parts of the world, I mean, can you share a little bit with us, for those of us who haven't experienced maybe some of the design differences that that we see in different regions? I mean, what is the biggest difference you find from a lighting perspective in those different parts of the world? Is it the same as the U.S.? Are we unique in our own craziness, or do you see other preferences, you know, more regionally from a global perspective?
Yes. So in different parts of the world, like some basic concepts, in terms of how comfortable you are sitting on like super bright light or having a light shining in your eyes, they are general, and there are things that regardless of where you're from, we can make adjustment for people to feel more comfortable, or like how much light level you need to read. It doesn't matter where you're from. It matters how old are you, but it doesn't matter where you were born or where you're working. But there are some things that are more cultural, and people, it's just how people would prefer from the aesthetic part. Like, for example, in Middle East, people tend to go with much warmer color temperature. And that's maybe because you have a lot of warmer finishes in the interior design, and there are much more decoration inside a house. So a color temperature of 2700K, which is the color temperature of an incandescent bulb, is the preferred color temperature. In America, mostly people perceive the 3000K as the preferred white color. But also it depends. Some people prefer to go with the 35, which is a little cooler color temperature. In India, for example, 4000K, which for us in America seems too cool, is the preferred white color. Also, there are some aesthetic part in terms of the finishes. Like in America, mostly designers prefer to have matte finishes on light fixture. But you're in Europe, having a glossy finish is preferred. Like something that might be considered as outdated here might be perceived as a modern looking in Europe. So when we designed, when we started working on a project, it's very important to know your client, and like what is their preferred aesthetic, what is their style, and sometimes these cultural backgrounds also affect our design too.
That's interesting, because I mean, it's very common, I know, for design firms, especially in major cities, to work with clients that are global, right? And so you may be designing a space for them based on preferences for, you know, Boston or New York or LA or San Francisco, and then next week work on a space for them in Asia or the Middle East or Europe, and having to tie those, you know, and not being able to just do what you did and having to, you know, kind of lean towards those cultural differences. That would be very interesting. And again, ties right back into why a lighting designer is important, right?
Yes, and that's the beauty of the lighting design. Like, that's the part that I love about lighting designer. We don't only work on one type of project. We get exposed to many types of projects, which is amazing. And in every single project, I learn something new, which is, I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, we see that. I mean, we're Millikan is a global company, and so we've got design studios in Asia, UK, and in the US. And it is very interesting seeing the differences in, you know, colors that they prefer in those different markets versus here. We're pretty boring in the US. They've got some really fun colors over there. So, you know, I think
you're more conservative.
Oh, that is that the term for it?
That's the nice way to put it.
This whole time I thought it was just boring. But you know, and it's, and I don't think it's that the designers don't want to have more color and more fun. I think it's the end users and folks that, you know, just feel like, oh no, I could never do that. That's really interesting. That's really, really cool. Thank you.
I love that question. I love learning about the world and other cultures. And here is another question about learning. Shahrzad, what do you think we as humans, or we as a society, can learn about how we build buildings based on nature?
That's a very interesting question. So in any aspect of your life, the more you get closer to the natural elements, and the way you can be closer to what it was supposed to be, it's a better solution. It's a healthier option. Like, we are supposed to get sufficient amount of daylight during the day, because we are supposed to work outside. And then as the sun goes down, you need to stop working, and you eventually go in the relaxation mode, and then you go to sleep. And that is something that we should consider when we are designing. First of all, how much daylight you are bringing into the space. And then if it's not possible, what are the ways to compensate this loss of daylight? that you are experiencing every day. Also, one other aspect of this question might be how we will keep our environment safe, and what are the ways that we can save the earth, and like how we can keep the natural element alive for the next generation. Within lighting, we had really amazing products right now. We used to use mercury lamps in project, which is very dangerous for the environment and also for the well-being of the occupants. But now we are replacing them with LED lights. We are using much less energy, which are all improvements, but we still can do much better.
That's perfect. That's awesome.
Amen.
I love that. Brian, do you know what time it is?
I know what time it is.
It's time for the Fast Five. Shahrzad, this is the part of the podcast where I take five fun questions and ask them to you in rapid fire form. Don't be nervous. Don't be afraid. We're going to have some fun. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Everybody gets nervous, though, for the Fast Five. So don't feel bad if you're nervous. Natural.
Question number one. Shahrzad, what is your perfect day off?
The day that I do nothing.
Indeed. That's a great answer. I love that answer. Are you an early morning or a late night person?
Early morning.
Early morning. Question number three, how do you take your coffee?
Black.
Black, me too.
But I drink more tea than coffee.
Oh, okay. There you go. I like it. I like it. What is one country you wish to visit?
Egypt.
Egypt. Wonderful.
Yeah.
And the last question, what did you want to be when you were a kid?
That's a very funny question. When my first grade teacher asked me that question, I told her that I want to be a mom.
I love that answer. That's a great answer. Are you a mom?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. I'm a dad, and most of the time I think it's great.
My seven-year-old wants to, that's what she says. She says, I want to be a mom and have 100 kids. and we just laugh. Like, whatever you say, yeah, wait till you have one.
I love that answer. That's a heartwarming answer. I love it. Shahrzad, thank you so much for joining us today. You really opened my eyes to lighting and design and how it affects us in our spaces. I'm certainly going to be more in tune when I walk into a space to pay attention to the lighting to see how I feel rather than just looking at the floor. We certainly appreciate your time and your expertise.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun and it was really nice talking to you, and I hope your audience enjoyed this conversation as much as I did.
Thank you.
Faithful listeners, or casual listeners, or people who are listening to this podcast by mistake, don't hesitate to like, share, post our podcast to spread the ideas of health and wellness. We want to create a better world with you. From all of us at Being Well, according to Dan and Brian, I'm Dan Shuffleton.
And I'm Brian Thompson.
And we hope you have a terrific day and a beautiful tomorrow.